So let's open it up to questions. And I think one of the questions is, given the trends in global value chains, what should we be doing in developing countries? Where are the opportunities for local suppliers? And I was talking to Tim earlier about, well, you know, maybe the global markets are kind of crowded and very competitive. What about other markets? So it would be interesting to hear from you guys your reaction to what's happening globally. That's, you know, this is the centerpiece of what's being discussed this week at the World Trade Organization. And what do we see our role in developing countries?
I think there are two sites that we have to look into as we are looking. He made a very valid point that in a global value chains, we have to really pick a niche or a niche and integrate in through that. I mean, there is no other way you can do it. Taiwan did a very different thing, and they, my, you know, government heavily invested, providing a seed money, creating a value around that, a few companies, and then integrating rest of the economy, especially computer manufacturing, motherboard manufacturing. And they had an alliance with Intel. I have lived in Japan. I have seen that how they structured their own economy. It's a geese kind of a thing. Means there is a lead, and then there are suppliers in a very hierarchical structure. And this is the entire Pacific Rim is arranged like that. They have given a part in the global value chain to each supplier in a country. For instance, there is a specific role to a Laos that is not given to Taiwan or anybody else. So they have that arrangement. Even China is being configured within the whole chain. And Japanese manufacturers very selectively take their products for manufacturing to China. But whenever new Canon camera is to come out from Japan, that will be designed and manufactured for initially 3 or 4 months in Japan before it is being moved to their facility in Shanghai or in anywhere in China. But it does not leave aside the domestic markets, because most of the value is traded. And we were talking about the value chains here. So let's understand that 80 or 90% of the value is always traded within a country in the domestic markets. And this is where the most of the SMEs and the small folks that we normally deal with, you can easily supply to. For instance, I mean, their standards are much more closer to whatever has been, you know, being produced in the same domestic market. It will take a while, and it will take an effort and a lot of investment before they can match it up with the global value chains in terms of investment, unless the basic value is traded for quite some time within the domestic market. It's not going to happen. So that's my take after working from a private sector and both in the government and the policy role. I have played all three in my previous job, so that's my, I would like your comment on that. Does it make sense or not?
Well, I mean, it said a lot of things, and some of them I agree with, and some of them I'm not sure. First of all, I think that, you know, Taiwan, you know, only 20 million people, so it developed through this contract manufacturing framework, really, by and large. And to this day, you know, Taiwanese companies have a difficult time with their own brands, and they're still kind of working for global value chains. So, and they've been able to kind of survive by moving all of the kind of high volume production to China. So the Japanese system is very different, as you said. It's kind of hierarchical. The local market is a test market. But the problem there for the Japanese has been what they call the Galapagos syndrome, right? Where, you know, products sell in Japan, they're built to Japanese standards and taste, but really are not popular anywhere else. So there's been a kind of, for a variety of reasons, a gradual kind of grinding down of that model. You know, back in the dark ages when I was in graduate school, the Japanese model was, you know, where you have very close linkages between design and manufacturing, design for manufacturability, as recent as 2001, I was doing interviews, a set of interviews, 2001 to 2003 in Japan, talking to electronics companies there, and they're still talking about in-house semiconductor design, the best semiconductors then we get to use them first, and then we'll sell them later to everybody else. This is assuming a lot. It's assuming that they make the best semiconductors in the world, you know, and investing in semiconductor production is extremely expensive. So the American model is completely different. You know, it's like we'll take our kernel and throw everything else out, you know, outsource everything else. You know, maybe you don't have the quality of Japanese products, but you can move a lot quicker and you can shave costs out of the system. So there are different models out there. And I think in developing countries, it's really different if your lead firm is a Japanese firm or a U.S. firm, for example. So the Japanese firm will maybe take 2 or 3 years to qualify you as a supplier. And then once you're qualified, they will hang on to you forever, even if you screw up, you know. Americans will, sit down, looks good, okay. If it doesn't work, you're gone. So there's it's a completely different kind of way of doing business. And I think that, you know, not to, that the one's better or worse, but they're extremely different. So countries are different, industries are different, segments of the value chain are different. And this is the kind of detailed knowledge that I think is really important to doing a good development project, is to kind of know your industry, know your value chain niche, and know the global market and the kind of end markets for sure. So I'm not sure if that answered your, it was a good enough comment, but I tried.
You had this thing that global value chains, and we should focus on Walmart, Tesco, or Costco, or whichever. The thing is, when you're talking SMEs, they don't have the quality standards or the production levels. So why can't we focus on the SMEs in a global economy? Maybe, say, in America, which is importing spices in a small scale for a certain specific segment.
Match to match.
Yeah. Match to match.
Yeah. I just did a survey in the U.S. of outsourcing and offshoring practices by U.S. organizations. And small organizations don't do it at all. I mean, he said most of the economy is local and continues to be local. Most small companies don't even outsource, except for maybe IT, janitorial services, and trucking. But, you know, there's a certain scale, minimum economies of scale, where you have so many people in your call center that you might look at outsourcing that. So there is that. On the other hand, you know, this kind of transparency and information that I talked about is driving those minimum scale economies down, where you can connect to people through the internet or through international travel, you know, very easily, and set up these arrangements. So I think it's moving in that direction, but it's so far been and continues to be a game of big companies. And with the consolidation that we've seen, that's the direction it's been going, big at every level of the value chain. So I'm a little, I think there's hope, and I think that certainly can happen, and it does happen. But by and large, this has been a game for big companies. Yeah.
First, a comment, then a question. Your question is how do development projects engage with the private sector? And just judging from the graphic up there, you've got state and sector association roles. From the donor perspective, it seems that what we're trying to do is literally create the conditions under which both of those actors can cooperate. Otherwise, we have to create one or the other, sometimes both. and literally do everything you've got on that chain. The question is, over time and conditions, we have to prioritize the things that we are going to do. And the puzzle is complex enough that we can come up with a laundry list of things that need to be done, but we may not understand really what needs to be done first, second, and third in sequence to get the biggest impact. Have you seen any research that kind of untangles that knot?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, what I think being talked about is kind of value chain mapping. So you kind of look for the gaps, because the priorities are going to be different every time. So I mean, it's complicated, and the value chain map is not just in the country; it's the whole value chain map. You may not, the global piece might not be relevant. It may be a regional piece or just a local piece, or even in a particular, you might have a very isolated economy. So that's not connected, but you need to ask the question. So it's answerable. It just needs to be kind of part of the normal way of doing these projects.
Would you say that regional and domestic markets would be more appropriate for USAID to focus on to try to reach low-income producers rather than trying to, except in some of the very high-value tropical product sectors like coffee where
right.
there's comparative advantage?
Well, I just think that, you know, I wouldn't want to give up the home runs, you know, and there's where some kind of unique product or process or something that the way I see kind of outsourcing is as coming these waves, right? You have manufacturing and you have services, but within that many kind of waves where in services, you know, starting with simple things to kind of experimenting with outsourcing parts of R&D, there's a lot of kind of experimentation going on. So what you want to be is on that. You want to surf that, you know, wave. You want to be on that, you know. You want to be in the foam, you know, when it's kind of all over and there's a lot of competition. And you don't want to be too soon to try something that, that what is a friend of mine, Seishi Kimura, who wrote about a strategic external fit, which means kind of get into a business that fits with what kind of lead firms, global lead firms, are just starting to outsource. But you don't want to be too soon, because then you're. Nobody's going to, you know, you're not going to get anywhere any quick. So just kind of when something's taking off. And I think there's a lot of backward-looking kind of, you know, we want to be like Taiwan, so we're going to get into contract manufacturing of electronics. You know, so I see this in Brazil today. The policymakers there want to make iPhones and iPads, you know, in Brazil. And I'm like, oh, you know, too late. But they still do. So I don't want to throw away that the chance of kind of being, you know, the idea of looking for that sweet spot that fits with the local capabilities, with the geography, you know, how if you close far away, time zones, all these different things. But certainly the local, and I didn't really get that much time to go into it, but the success stories that we've seen, many of them have the local market as a key element, as a key kind of learning. And you know, you talked about this in Japan as well. You know, we kind of work it out here, and then we go, and then we kind of launch that globally. So, you know, in kind of humbler settings, absolutely. I mean, because that's where the action is. I mean, you can kind of think global all you want, and if the connections aren't there. But I'll finally say, what I have seen is policymakers do a really good job at outreach. You know, we did a project recently in Macedonia, where the government that has come up in the last since 85 or whatever, they're pretty technocratic. I mean, I don't know that much about it, but that's my impression. And they decided to focus on automobile FDI. So they went and they put somebody in Detroit. And that's brilliant, you know. So they kind of get to know the companies, and they've been successful in attracting companies, you know, to Macedonia. So, you know, I mean, if you have smart people who are kind of know what they're doing and can target their efforts, things can happen. I mean, there's a lot of action still in the world. The door is not closed.
But are donors good at finding a customer?
I don't know what donors are good at. I think they're getting better every day.
I wanted to ask you a quick question, since you'd mentioned it earlier about policy space and a resurgence of industrial policy. I'm sure you get questions all the time about, you know, how can we do good government policy that promotes globalization. I was just wondering if there are new things that you're aware of that my background is such that I usually don't think of industrial policy as a good thing, but I'd like to hear about what's been going on and what bad effects or good effects might have happened.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, it's fascinating because it has gone through these, you know, Washington Consensus, post-Washington Consensus phases where, and like it or not, industrial policy is back, you know. So there's all of this question about kind of, you know, picking winners and et cetera and all this. But it's here. What's interesting to me is that much of the industrial policy I see being implemented is kind of backward-looking. It's kind of, let's do the Korea thing. You know, let's set up kind of tariff barriers and do import substitution. And I mean, we see this in Russia right now. We see it in Brazil big time. Of course, big countries have a completely different playing field than small countries. So this, right? Because they have the market as the kind of carrot. Right, their own market. So what I see is the small countries like Macedonia getting it, you know, and saying, we're not going to have an auto industry. We're going to have as many suppliers as we can. Hopefully they'll be in kind of related fields, areas, processes, so we can kind of do some backward linkages and get some kind of paint or, you know, metal processing or something that feeds in and kind of be smart about a cluster approach. The big countries are kind of, they want to be Korea, you know? So what's interesting is, to me, is that they want to be Korea, and it's not turning out that way, because the world does not work that way anymore. So even China, you know, has this kind of really ambiguous relationship with the global economy, where it's kind of opened itself up to the FDI, but it's also, it's got state-owned firms, it's national champions, it doesn't really, you know, so, and I think the intention, if there was any single intention in China, open question, was to, you know, develop those national firms that would be vertically integrated and kind of, you know, move ahead that way. And it really hasn't turned out that way. So what the intentions are one thing and the reality is another. What's it? Exactly. No, and I mean, I was in Vietnam in 1993 on a UNITO project, and they were going to be the next, you know, Korea too. You know, it hasn't turned out that way. So we've gotten pieces of the value chain. And I remember trying to explain this, and it's so foreign in a sense. If you have a nationalistic view, which is that we want our companies to succeed in a global economy, and kind of you don't want to buy any foreign technology or parts or anything, you know. And Chinese firms, I mean, China struggles with this today. They really don't like it that, you know, that Qualcomm's inside all their cell phones. They have to pay royalties to foreign companies. So. You know, but if you want to have a cell phone infrastructure, you know, that's it. You know, this Galapagos approach is not going to, you don't have the scale. Even in China, they don't have the scale, which is really saying something.
Thank you very much.